Hi, everyone. Welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Nick Rurkraut.
And I'm Sophia Simonello.
And today we have an epic episode, epic in every sense of the word. We are talking about a new movie, a movie that is being released today wide by Warner Brothers. We've been anticipating it all year and we've talked about it recently. But this is Paul Thomas Anderson's latest film, One Battle After Another, which is exactly what life feels like right now. One battle after another. And that reference comes very early in the film. But we are going to talk all about this movie today, what we think about it, what we loved. And we'll dip into some of its Oscars prospects, which we'll get into throughout the season as we talk about other festivals and films. But I can't wait to talk about this today. I don't think I've had quite enough time to process since my viewing, but I really enjoyed it. And I can't wait to hear some more of what you have thought about it.
Yeah, I am thrilled to be talking about One Battle After Another today. This is one of those movies where I think, not to get hyperbolic and crazy right away, but this might be the most important movie, at least new release, that we've talked about on this show. Because to me, that's what it is. This is the defining American film of the 2020s so far. I think what Paul Thomas Anderson does here is heroic. It's remarkable. It is so well made and fun. Also, at the same time, I think for a movie that is detailing the dark heart of America, past, present, and future, I think, shocked by how entertaining it was. It feels like this old school action blockbuster, but it also has all of those signature themes from Anderson's work that we love. So I can't wait to talk about this and our experiences seeing it. And we've done a really good job, I think, of not really discussing it with each other yet. So we have a lot to talk about, I think, together for the first time.
Yeah, I agree. So let's start out, as we always do, the description of the film. When an enemy resurfaces after 16 years, a group of ex-revolutionaries reunite to rescue the daughter of one of their own. This is written and directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. We'll talk about his adaptation of that also, but this stars Leonardo DiCaprio, Sean Penn, Chase Infinity, Teyana Taylor, Regina Hall, and more. This is being released in a few different formats. So something we've briefly mentioned, but also last year with The Brutalist and that film being released in VistaVision and shot in it also, which is important. This is the original format for this film, what it was also shot on. And the colors were gorgeous. The cinematography is beautiful. And I think that's exemplified by the aspect ratio, which is quite widescreen for most digital formats. And VistaVision is 1.5 to 1. So it's nearly a square. So you get to really elongate the frame vertically. It's also being shown in IMAX 70 millimeter. It's also being shown on 70 millimeter. And then also in digital formats in 4K, 2K, and Dolby Vision with Atmos. So there are a lot of different options. I would definitely look online, look at what your local theaters are showing. I'm never going to complain about 70 millimeter film, but those first two formats are the largest you can see. And it's gorgeous. We'll get into that. But I was lucky enough to see it in VistaVision here in New York, one of the lucky cities to have that print. And you both feel the film and are one with it. I love there are shots of like rolling hills. Mm-hmm. And again, also like The Brutalist, I'll stop comparing it because it's not that similar. But the shot in the beginning when they're driving to Philly and that camera is so close to the ground. This is happening here as they're rolling over hills. And you just get this really electric feeling from that, which I really liked, but there are a lot of different techniques used, obviously. How did you see it and what did you like from your viewing visually?
Oh my gosh. So I had truly the perfect first viewing experience, which is that I saw it on the Warner Brothers lot in VistaVision. Yes, I did cry. I was very overwhelmed by this experience in many ways. And I think you're absolutely right about the image in VistaVision. It feels very tight and absolutely magnificent. I think especially in the final stretch of this movie, which we'll talk about later on. I mean, you cannot look away. You are just completely engrossed by the action. And I was just so, again, as I always am, but especially now, I think just happy to be alive at the same time as Paul Thomas Anderson. Seeing it in VistaVision, I think, is definitely the preferred format. It's available in New York, LA, London, and Boston, but I don't think you can really go wrong. That's the thing. I think like the VistaVision is amazing because of how it looks, and it's a rare technological thing, right? And it's amazing that he's doing this and resurrecting this old format. But I think it's going to be amazing no matter how you see it. It is that kind of movie. It's the kind of movie that really sweeps you off your feet and reminds you why you love movies, how vital they are, and how important the voices of directors like Paul Thomas Anderson really are. So I saw it the first time in VistaVision, the second time in regular 70mm. By the time this episode comes out, I'll have also seen it in IMAX 70mm. I'm really just going to catch them all. I'm going to collect all of the different ways that you can see this movie. And not just to compare it, but just because I love it so much. And I think it is just such an incredible experience. I keep using the word experience because that's exactly what this is. And so many of his films are like that. But this, I think, finds him really pushing himself into a completely new arena, a new genre. He's making an action film. I mean, there are some action sequences in this where, and I am not an action movie person necessarily, right? But I loved every minute of the action. I found it so thrilling. And I think that, you know, this movie, it's 2 hours and 40 minutes. It flies by. And I'm not just saying this. I know if you've listened to our show before, you're probably thinking, but she likes slow movies. She likes slow things. And I do. But this felt like, I would say, 90 minutes. Definitely sub 2 hours. It moves from one point to the next effortlessly. So I love it so much. And I don't think there's a wrong way to see it, really. I think it'll be fun to hear people compare their experiences. And, you know, maybe it's their first VistaVision film or their first 70mm film where they're learning about that for the first time, or you're seeing it in digital because that's what's in your area and you want to go see the movie. Again, I really don't think you can go wrong. I think it's going to be amazing no matter where you see it.
I agree with that. And I agree with how it flies by too. I know you mentioned that early on, but when I saw it, it truly does feel less than 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a feat to how the movie is paced. It has a lot to do with the editing and the story, and how the sequences just really capture you and you are one with the action. You know, it opens up on this very tense scene and 15 minutes fly by before the title card. And then there are certain moments of the film that I looked at my watch to see how much time had passed, because it just felt like there's no way we could be 1-2+ hours into this movie yet. And it's doing so many things, and that is complimentary in every way, because it is action. It's a thriller. It has a lot of his quirky character writing and dialogue in there. You know, you see parts of every film that he has made, even Inherent Vice, even There Will Be Blood. And you also see parts of inspirations that he has pulled from also, which I think is wonderful and will attract more audiences than maybe are familiar with PTA, or at least his name, and saying that, oh, let's go see a PTA film.
I agree. And I think one of the things that's actually really exciting for me is that this will be a number of people's first Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Because I think for people like us who cover the Oscars, or, you know, who are really into film, I love Phantom Thread and There Will Be Blood and The Master. And we can talk about all of his movies, Boogie Nights, but there are going to be some people who haven't seen any of those films before, but are going to see it because they hear great things about it. It's an action movie. It has Leonardo DiCaprio in it. So the fact that there are going to be people out there who maybe will use this film as a gateway into the rest of his filmography, or will really get that exposure to his weird, unique sense of humor and his really relevant themes, I think, of found family and father-daughter relationships here, I think that that will be something that will really connect with viewers. So yeah, I'm thrilled. I think especially as, you know, PTA is my favorite director working today or past, really. So I think to get to see a new kind of film for him and one that is really resonating with audiences already and critics is just, it's so exciting. It makes me so happy.
Yeah, I think this is his most accessible film. I think the politics of it may be a problem for some, or how it's perceived by different bodies of people, namely the government or people that he is portraying in a way by some of these characters. I love many of their names, but the fact that the villain is called Colonel Stephen J. Lockjaw just says all you need to know about it, let alone his wispy hairstyle being portrayed by Sean Penn and all of his mannerisms. I love his waddle that he has and how he says certain words, especially towards the end. But there's such an evilness inside of him, and it's a little bit of a caricature, but it gets the point across very easily. And so I think some viewers may just consider PTA the left trying to take over, or it just adding to this divisiveness in this country. But I think what he's doing is extremely humanizing. These characters are so well balanced and developed. And I think saying that about an epic movie, an action movie, a big blockbuster, that's not done very often. Or the fact that we could talk about these characters in depth, Perfidia Beverly Hills, Willa, Bob, their pasts, and how that navigates their present and the traumas they've been through, the relationships they've had to make or cut off. It's just so enriched. And I think that makes what PTA has done that much greater. And I hope can be seen in a holistic way and not viewed or dismissed immediately because of what he's saying.
Yeah, and I think this is actually a great segue into really talking about how the film kicks off and how PTA plays with time in this story, because I think you're right. There will be people who dismiss this movie outright or who have some internal pearl-clutching panic over it. I'm frankly not interested in that. They can take that elsewhere. I think this is a brilliant piece of art that actually doesn't just look at the violence that's happening right now in our country specifically, but also elsewhere, and that's tied to the government. But it's also really a story about relationships. It's a story about mothers and daughters. It's a story about fathers and daughters, about community, about found family, about hope also, and putting hope and trust in your children and in future generations. And I feel like a lot of movies that try to talk about the moment that we're in right now can be really cynical or can be really scared to dive into these things. And I like the fearlessness and the hopefulness of this movie. But yeah, I mean, it puts you right in it right away, doesn't it? The movie opens with Johnny Greenwood's amazing score. Yeah. I love this score. I think it's my favorite score that he's ever done, which is crazy because I listen to There Will Be Blood and Phantom Thread all the time. But it begins with that score, and you see Teyana Taylor walking along this road, right? She's like on a highway and it's overlooking an immigration detention facility at the US-Mexico border. So like I said, puts you right in an issue that we're talking about right now and something that's very real. And what you see then is a great introduction to this character who is this really a leader of this group of revolutionaries, the French 75, another great name. And we see her really immediately contrasted with another great character name, Pat or Ghetto Pat or Rocket Man. He has a million different names. And he operates much differently compared to Perfidia Beverly Hills. she's this strong leader, and he's the one who's kind of rolling around in the grass trying to set off these explosives to cause a distraction. And I love that he's introducing us right away, yes, to this big set piece, this big introduction, but even more importantly, I think to these two characters and to their relationship. So I love how it opens, and it is just this thrilling moment of getting to see this group, the French 75, open the gates of this detention center and put, I think she says, anywhere from 250 to 275 migrants on a truck to get them out of there. And The camera, PTA's camera, takes us inside, and we get to see those images that we're so familiar with. You see all of that, and it puts you right in the now. But then he does a cool little thing with time that we can talk about that I really like. And we get introduced to Sean Penn in a great way. I mean, for listeners who don't want spoilers and who are just listening to the beginning section of this, I will not spoil the very funny, deranged interaction that we get between Perfidia Beverly Hills and Lockjaw at the beginning. But this is that classic PTA humor where I have to say that when I saw it the second time, my audience did not know it was okay to laugh. And I'm going to tell you it's okay to laugh because it's wild.
It does take you aback because I think it's so early. A lot of that kind of humor usually waits, but It puts a spin on that relationship and the dynamic of Perfidia over him. And I like that. I really like how he plays with time throughout this movie. There are segments that are explicitly detailed, and then there are other shots that don't tell you how much time has passed. And I think That was when I really loved those moments and knew what he was doing, because it plays with your perception of anticipation and thrill and waiting to see what these characters are going to do. I love the intro. You start out with a bang, the score booming. I don't know if it was the theater I was in, but like my seat was shaking.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted. And there are some comparisons I will make to Dune. Don't worry. But it's that feeling of, you know, wanting your body to rattle, and some of those grand shots, epic shots of landscapes with these really close close-ups, and getting to see the characters and the space. And I love how he played with scope in that way. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the scenes revolve around him playing with those things. And I think in the beginning, he's shocking you. He's walking you through those detention centers, through the fences, the walkways, seeing the people lying on the ground, not having beds, not being livable. Mm-hmm. And that just being a fact of what it is. And he and the French 75, they have a purpose. They go in there and they're extracting everybody. And I think the mission and really the honesty in that is what makes it so moving.
Yeah.
Realizing that this is their lives and their revolutionaries, and they have done this. And later we learn that Perfidia's ancestors have done this for generations. Mm-hmm. And so you realize the effect that that has. And I loved hearing from PTA after talk about how he studied, and he's been developing this movie for nearly two decades. He studied a lot of these 60s revolutionaries. So this is based on real groups of people and history. And I think blurring the lines between history and fiction is also what's amazing about what he does.
I think so too. And that reminds me, you know, when we think of PTA as a filmmaker, a lot of his films, I mean, you look at The Master, There Will Be Blood, Phantom Thread, Licorice Pizza. I mean, the list goes on and on. He likes looking back. That's really his thing. He likes picking a time period, and he likes really digging into that setting, how those characters would behave. And here it is contemporary, and yet it's also looking at, like you said, history. It's showing that this has always been happening, right? And PTA had this great interview with the LA Times where he basically talked about how you can't be thinking this is happening for the first time right now, because it's been going on for a very long time. I think there are wake-up calls, right? We're in a very serious point in history. But at the same time, people have been treated like this and also fighting it for so long. And I think that opening montage, really, the first big section of this movie is great because we're getting, at the same time, a montage of Perfidia and Pat, Leonardo DiCaprio and Teyana Taylor falling in love, and the French 75 really, as you mentioned early, fighting one battle after another against all of these different corrupt institutions and groups. So you really get to know them, I think, in that section, and you also get to experience this incredible filmmaking. I mean, there's a car chase early in the movie that isn't even the best one. It's not even the best one in the movie, and it's still so good. And I love that he just really sets it up so strongly. So then when you do get that time jump, and all of a sudden, you know, it's 16 years later, the baby girl that Pat and Perfidia have is suddenly a teenager, and Perfidia's out of the picture. Now Pat is Bob, and baby Charlene is Willa, and they are effectively in witness protection in Bacton Cross. That time jump is so unique because the opening of the movie feels like right now, and the 16 years later moment feels like right now. So it's a kind of grounding yet disorienting experience with time that I thought was so successful in the storytelling.
Yeah, I agree. And usually in movies, that change needs to be shown. Like, you have characters aging, but I think him not doing that furthers the point that this is still happening now, whereas it was in the past, and that feels like the present. So it doesn't throw you off. You're in a completely different setting too, which I love that he talked about his scouting determined what shots they would have, but also in showing the California landscape, which he has done time and again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we start the movie in the city, also in the detention center, and now we're in the woods. No one could tell you where you were based on their house. They're very secretive. They're, like you said, they changed their names, and we recognize that they've had this more normal life, not entirely of solitude, but they've made new relationships and friendships that they don't even realize sets them up for the next act of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I love like how Benicio del Toro comes in as sensei. He is this new father figure for Willa. And I love that that is developed in certain ways that aren't usually done on film. It's quiet, but it's very much present. And I loved DiCaprio's paranoia and how he makes you feel as an audience member or think that, you know, this 16 years has passed. What does that do to you mentally? You know, constantly thinking that people are after you. And then how that makes Willa feel, having to live with him. They have these monitors that he always makes her keep with her. And when they're within a certain distance of each other, they go off.
Mm-hmm.
So he always wants her to have this, even though they don't always work. It's this is where some of the comedy comes in. Like with his paranoia, there's a moment where he's on a call and he has to do something fast, and he's smoking pot and he's on the call and they're like, you gotta go. And he just keeps smoking, not realizing what's happening. He's like, oh crap, I'm high. It's like, it's so funny.
It's so
funny. And I love how Leo navigates that part of the character. Because that also, I mean, the characters, especially his, flows between comedy and serious and mature and playful. So it's, I think, a brilliant way that we get to see parts of what he's done in different films together here. And again, it's the relationship of Bob and Willa, Sensei and Willa, and Bob and Sensei that lead us into the next act of the film, which again is well developed, but is also thrilling at the same time, apart from what action is happening or is about to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's really great about the characters here too, and what I love about the writing, is that, you know, early on in the film when Perfidia is captured. Also, quick aside, do you think that PTA watches Drag Race? Because how else do you come up with the name Perfidia Beverly Hills?
I also love the name Jungle Pussy and her whole speech at the bank.
One of my favorite parts.
It's so good.
One of my favorite parts of the movie. I'm not even kidding. The second time I saw it and it was her time, I was like, yes, we're here again. I got to
it's
hear
her moment.
The incredible monologue of her just standing on top of the table with the gun over her head.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. But what's so cool, I think, about these characters is that, you know, Perfidia, when she's captured, she's not in the movie anymore after Act One. Yet her presence lingers over the film in great ways because of how well we feel like we know her. And because Willa has so many of her mother's characteristics we come to learn throughout the course of the movie. I think she has that kind of inner strength, that stubbornness. She has all of that. Her sense of humor is very similar. And I think getting to see Willa develop and to see what Chase Infinity, who plays Willa, brings to that part is really exciting because she's also taking care of her dad. She's the one who, you know, she's leaving to go to the school dance and she reminds him that there's a casserole in the kitchen for him for dinner. She's the one who's saying, what time did you get home last night? You're hungover. And, you know, as he learns at her parent-teacher conference, she's a great student. She has a good head on her shoulders. And those aren't things that he can necessarily say for himself. And I think you're absolutely right. It's like in 16 years of being paranoid and turning to weed and alcohol, like he says, what does that do to your brain? And just thinking, okay, this guy, Lockjaw, he's out there somewhere. He's found and captured most of the French 75 who have now basically disbanded because they have to. They're just out in the world operating solo. When is he going to get there? It's just a matter of time. So then I think when he does get there, that really is when the film escalates and gets even faster because Willa and her dad are separated and they're both on the run from Lockjaw. And I think that's just a really cool storytelling device too at the same time.
And I love how that happens because it happens in an instant. Willa is approached by Deandra, the Regina Hall character, who I love, who isn't in the movie that much, but you feel her motherly presence and how much she cares about Willa in those moments from the beginning and later on in the film when she comes back. But she has one of those trackers and Willa knows. She's like, whoever has one of these, I have to trust you with my life. And there are films that use this trope and the kids don't listen and it causes an unnecessary scuffle in the movie, but it's streamlined here. So we keep everything moving. And I think that's the most important thing is the pacing is just go, go, go.
Yeah.
So she goes with Regina. Meanwhile, this is one of the cuts or lack of edits, I would say, where Bob knows he has to get out. We don't see him moving around or anything. And the shot stays on the front door. And then the door explodes. It's like, how much time has passed? We don't know where Bob is. We think he's still on the couch right there, honestly.
Yeah.
And so those little moments, also his use of fade cuts are brilliant. Again, blurring time, showing us different locations. So I love that. Again, it keeps it moving and engaged in the characters. And then the humor again comes back when Bob is watching the Battle of Algiers on TV when this is happening, when they're raiding his house. It's like, it's just a perfect note.
I also, you were talking about Leo and his performance. This is just an incredible performance from DiCaprio. I love when he goes into full comedy mode and it's just so out there and over the top. I love that. Like, I was thinking a lot about the moment in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood when he's hungover on set and he's throwing things around his trailer. He's crying to Julia Butters as they're reading their books on their break and he keeps forgetting his lines. But then also in The Wolf of Wall Street, I thought a lot about that performance. And this just feels like, I think, so it feels like it has shades and facets of so many of his great comedic roles, but also feels so different. It's so layered because at the core of his performance too is this love for his daughter and his need to protect her and also feeling like he can't do that anymore. And I think that's one of the things that really resonated with me watching this is that, you know, PTA is a dad too. He has, I think, 4 kids, and how hard that must be to raise children in today's world and to let them go and let them find their own way and to not really feel like the best person to be able to guide them in that because they're so different from you. And I thought DiCaprio captured that so well here. And it, those little moments of fear from him and just total desperation as he is trying for his life to remember these passwords so he can get to the rendezvous point. It is so funny. He is just so beyond desperate. He's like, have I not done enough in my life to be able to get this password from you? It's so funny.
And there's a whole scene where he's just trying to charge his phone because it's dead. And he spends like 15 minutes just like going around from outlet to outlet and Sensei just being like, come on, let's go. I felt like the bit dragged almost a little too long when he's yelling at the guy in the phone. But again, it's the comedy. It plays really well. It's not as zany as his most, I would say, in Wolf of Wall Street. Mm-hmm. But I think Hollywood's a really good example. Even Don't Look Up and the satire of that performance is what he's bringing here. So yeah, he's great. I think everyone will love him and what he's doing and how much he cares for Willa and wants to save her too.
Yeah. And you're right, I think, about Benicio del Toro's character Sensei being this stand-in father figure for Willa too, right? He's her martial arts teacher. And this is clearly something that's really important to her. It's how we're introduced to the character. I was kind of emotional seeing her for the first time because you're when the time jump happens, it's kind of moving how you just get that shot. And it's the close up of her in her uniform on the mat. And I love how Sensei, the entire time we really get to know him, he's with Bob. And he is just so calm and level-headed the whole time. It's just, he's such a perfect foil to Bob's exasperated energy. I love how he just is saying, you know, like, ocean waves, Bob. And yeah, I mean, that whole section of the movie where he's just trying to find a place to charge his phone and he keeps having to move outlets and find a new outlet. It's those little details that make PTA movies so great. I think those little everyday details, that attention to those little things that are so important, but you wouldn't necessarily think of otherwise, that's what really I think makes his movies so great and so memorable.
I mean, it's that, but it's that there are multiple other things happening at the same time. It's Sensei being determined, figuring out what he's doing. We don't really know in this moment. He's gathering people in the house to get out. So there are always multiple things going on. And that, again, just creates this layered, real environment. So yeah, I also really like that a lot.
Yeah. All those little revolutions happening are on the periphery, right? It's like, it's not necessarily just the French 75 and just Bob and Willa on the run from Lockjaw and the military. There's so many other little things popping up that he introduces. And I think that resonates so much with the moment we're in now and also just the helpers in history, right? Like if you think of the people who are willing to step in and defend the people who need it, those are the stories that are worth telling. And he's doing that in so many ways here. I think maybe now we can just get into some light spoilers, just as we talk about, I think, some of the rest of the comedy in the film and some of the more horrifying things that come later on. I don't think we're going to get into everything because there's just way too much to cover. And we'll talk about it, I think, throughout the season. But this is your warning. I think if you're listening and you really don't want spoilers, like you don't want to hear what the needle drops are, or you don't want to hear us talk about the end of the movie or anything like that, tune out now. Come back after you've seen it. We'll have timestamps in too if you want to skip ahead to our Oscar section. But I did want to talk about a few spoilery things. So the first is just the Christmas Adventurers Club. And I'm putting this in the spoiler section because I think most people should have this be kind of a surprise. I think just in how these characters are introduced and the humor around it, because it is very dark. This is when I think we really see PTA flexing his satirical writing muscles, because I was laughing so hard at how stupid these men were and just how funny this was in the worst way, which is that so there's this thing called the Christmas Adventurers Club, which they are basically just a white supremacist organization, very gross. The men look like they are straight from the golf course. It's a very particular type. I think that casting here is great. They have an opening for a new member, and Lockjaw might be a good candidate. The production design here too, like how we're introduced to them, like in the hotel at the black tie wedding, and then also the underground tunnels as the Christmas music is playing. It's so ridiculous in the best way possible, I think.
The carol really got to me. And then there's also one in the credits at the very end. So I was laughing then. The underground tunnel sequence was also something that shocked me. And I'm like, wait, why am I shocked that there's a ton of tunnels connected between these people's homes?
Very Kubrickian. That reminded me of Kubrick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It all just gives you the ick and the neo-Nazi qualities to it. And, you know, there are two quotes that I really love. One is really funny, is how they all say, it's like their motto, how they greet each other. It's all hail Saint Nick.
I died. I laughed so hard because the first time I heard this, you almost think they're going to say hail Satan, but it's the hail Saint Nick. I love the way they talk because it's that kind of like exec middle-aged white guy corporate speak when they're like, well, well, Bob, let's get down to the point here. Let's get to the matter at hand. But I love when they're like, well, Jim Kringle died. And I'm like, Kringle, oh my God, like Chris Kringle. He is just having too much fun with these names.
Also another quote here, when they're talking about this character Avanti, played by Eric Schweig, he in the movie is described as, he looks native, but he's actually a Latino. It might be the other way around. But his quote in all of this is that he says he's an upstanding citizen because he works for them. And he's the one eliminating people, basically. Yeah. But he says he's an upstanding citizen, but he's not native, meaning he's not all white, of white heritage. So I wouldn't trust him. And the way he says that with such frankness, and he's not bothered by it at all, is the evil that he's portraying this whole group with. And so the way we see them work throughout the rest of the film really just tells you and shows you all you need to know about them. It's interesting that they come back in the end to, it's like they're an enemy of our enemy. So now they're kind of a friend in what they do to Lockjaw. Very weird, because they're not friends. But yeah, I think the whole way they show them with like the natural history exhibit behind them in that room with the fowl and all the stuffed animals is so bizarre.
With the Christmas china too. Did you see the little coffee cups with the trees on them? Yeah, you gotta, next time you see it. But it is, it's almost like they're in a museum, like one of those old timey exhibits, like they're behind glass or something. It is so weird, like Uncanny Valley. Yeah. And it's funny, like how they treat Lockjaw too, because, you know, he's so desperate, I think, for membership in this group, which then connects, of course, to his mission to catch Bob and Willa. But they even see him as lesser than, right? Like from the beginning, they don't see him necessarily as, you know, of their caliber.
Yeah. And when they bring up that they found this documentation that he has a child, that makes us think of Perfidia and Willa and question his relationship with everybody and what he did. So it adds this other quality to the narrative, but it creates this other conflict for Lockjaw, which again seems insane. for this group, this Christmas Adventures group, that they don't trust him anymore. And that coming back in the end to him saying, I was once raped in reverse by a semen demon. It's just, that got so many laughs. That was incredible.
Yeah. I mean, again, just like, you have to laugh at how pathetic these men are.
Yeah.
When that whole section too, and the fact that, because after the car chase, his face is so mangled because he's shot in the face. So he's saying all of these lines about being, you know, reverse raped and everything. And I mean, half of his face, he looks like a cartoon.
It's almost like Two-Face from The Dark Knight. And you see, it's just so gross to look at. And you can't believe he survived also.
Yeah, it's very, it reminded me a lot of in No Country for Old Men when Anton Chigurh walks off into the sunset at the end, and you're like, my God, this villain will not die. Like, you literally. So it's kind of playing on those, the Western themes, I think, a little bit too. Yeah. But as far as, I think, just PTA's direction here, absolutely spectacular. Like we've said, he's dealing with themes that he has across his career, but at the same time, this feels like he's mining new territory. And for me, the sequence that really did it is that car chase at the end. It's through those hills where you can't see what's behind you. You can't see what's in front of you. The way he captures that with a camera, it is thrilling. I thought, I just was like, I haven't seen anything like this from him ever.
And the score is booming again. And you are almost getting nauseous from the hills. Like, that's how real it feels. You're so close to the ground. It's so cool because it's also playing with dramatic irony, with us knowing Bob is in pursuit, but Willa not knowing that he's even close.
Yeah.
And he got buzzed at one moment and I think it stops working, but him getting turned around and, oh my God, there's just so much happening in that car chase, which is incredible. And how Willa is so smart too, and how she acts, but she's traumatized, but she knows how to defend herself. And I think that's also so inspiring to watch, and that you want to see Willa live at the end.
Yeah. I just found myself really loving her, like just really just rooting for her and really loving her. And I think that it reminded me so much of The Silence of the Lambs. Who, you know, Jonathan Demme is one of PTA's heroes, one of his inspirations as a director. And as we're seeing Willa near the end of the film, she does this great maneuver with her handcuffs and she's checking her corners and she has the gun and she's driving that car away. I mean, she is just like part Final Girl, part Clarice Starling to me there. And I love that. I love seeing, you know, after everything she's been through, knowing her parents too, like just seeing her drive that car away while handcuffed and having that gun there with her, I just thought that was so cool. And then by the time we get to the ending, like the real ending, it's just so moving, I think, as it's connecting her back with her dad and, you know, back with Bob and then back with her mother, and not in a physical way, but really more of, I think, in an emotional way. And that was really when the movie just, I cried at the end. I just felt very touched by it all. And you've gone on this really intense journey that I think by the end, it feels like such an emotional, hopeful, emotional release.
Yeah, I got really emotional when she starts reading the letter and Perfidia is speaking and she goes, are you happy? Do you have love? And that was just something, I think, you know, for a mother to not have been with her for so long, and in the letter finally realizing, or her stating that she has missed her, she's wanted to come back, but she can't, makes it feel so real. And you feel that bond that they have, that Willa has never consciously had with her, but you see and feel that connection. And yeah, that moment really just gets to you. And I'm glad we had that, because after the car chase, you wonder what else he's going to do and how he's going to close up those loose ends. And he does it just so it gives it emotion and body, and that you end with a fully realized story and not just something that's being sewn up because it has to be.
Yeah, I love that too. And I think that in the letter, the idea of Perfidia mentioning, you know, like, your dad and I tried and failed, and you are the next wave, really, I think is really beautiful. And also, A+ needle drop at the end. PTA knows how to do a needle drop, but here, like I was talking about, the Silence of the Lambs references and having that American Girl needle drop, perfect song to end the movie, I think.
I think all the needle drops are amazing. Great soundtrack and score, like we've been saying. The funny one to me was Soldier Boy, not Soldier Boy, but Soldier Boy being played to Lockjaw early in the movie. And I was like, and that's with him and Perfidia. And it's just like so fun. It's this really old song. And I'm like, oh, it just feels like PTA. He like gets this comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really, really good one. I agree. So let's get into Oscar potential. I think we should really, let's start maybe with the crafts and then we can work our way up to above the line. We talked a little bit about, I think, the art direction and the production design when it comes to the lair of our Christmas Adventurers Club, or, you know, just even some of the homes and the different spaces in the movie. Florencia Martin is the production designer and Andrew Max Kahn is the art director. Florencia did Licorice Pizza, so she's worked with PTA before. And then we also have Colleen Atwood, legendary Colleen Atwood, as the costume designer.
Mm-hmm.
He works with Mark Bridges normally, but Colleen Atwood on this film. And I don't know, what do you think about costume and production design? Just because I think these do tend to skew more period when it comes to Oscar nominations. But I think they could definitely show up at the guilds in the contemporary category for sure.
I agree with that. They're definitely on the lower end, I would say. I think space and setting is really important, but we might find that to be of more importance in different movies or qualities the Academy usually goes for. I wouldn't count them out. I think there will be many people being Bob for Halloween. So, I mean, it's an iconic look. It's not the only one, but I would say that's one of the most notable ones from the movie. I think because casting is a new category this year, that the casting director, Cassandra Koulikoundis, could absolutely, I think this is a big one because of all of the stars in this movie and how well they do, but it's a wonderful collection of actors. And I think especially with Chase Infinity making her feature debut, working alongside someone like Leonardo DiCaprio and everyone else we have, I think is a great way to start out this category with a nomination like this. I think there's great potential here. I think something else, maybe like bigger, like Frankenstein could also, but I think this is a safer nomination than the other two than we've talked about so far.
Yeah, I think so too. And so the screening I went to was mixed press industry, but the predominant group there was SAG and the SAG nominating committee. And the casting director, she was there at the Q&A and she got a huge round of applause and was talking about discovering Chase Infinity with PTA and how part of the reason why it was delayed for so long and, you know, in gestation for so long was because they hadn't found their Willa yet until they found Chase Infinity. So it's that good balance, I think, of new discoveries. You also have, as in all PTA movies, though, these like smaller roles and side characters are so well cast, in addition to just the bigger parts, too. So I think you're right here. And I think also a huge pairing that we see sometimes is sound and editing. I think we can expect, at least I'm expecting, to see sound happen. I think we look at the team, and especially with the action sequences and the way music is incorporated into the movie, the sound team has quite a few multi-nominees on it. So I think we could see that pop up. And of course, sound is tied to editing. Andy Jurgensen is our editor. He worked with PTA previously on Licorice Pizza. And I'm going to come out and say that I think this is going to win editing at the Oscars.
I think we have a few potential wins, and I just want to be careful with that because
I know.
See that happening with casting. I could see that with editing, even potentially with cinematography by Michael Bauman, who also worked on Licorice Pizza with PTA, and this is his second feature. So I think huge works for especially Bauman and Jurgensen, but two potential wins because of how good it is. And I think maybe I would favor editing here, but mm-hmm. I think sound is a definite possibility because of that combination, but also because of the work that's being done. We usually hear from lots of action or war films. And again, this has a combination of a lot happening at once. You mentioned the music and composer mm-hmm. Johnny Greenwood. I think this would be a great nomination. Again, could be a potential win. We have mm-hmm. a lot of scores to come yet, but I think this would be phenomenal too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. And I agree with you on cinematography. Maybe let's talk about the performances next. I think we both talked about how much we loved Leo in this and how great he is. I think in the actor race we have right now and just the way that lead acting categories have gone in recent years and this film's strength overall, I think he is definitely set to get another nomination. I think he's had a little bit of a dry spell recently. You know, he didn't get in for Killers, but I think this is a very different type of performance and he's such a sympathetic character, I think, especially as we get towards the end of the film. So I think we'll see Leo nominated again. What do you think?
I think he's most likely because actor is also less sewn up than some of the other categories maybe. I don't think we have anyone here in lead actress, but I think for supporting, for both categories, supporting actor and supporting actress, we could see two double nominations. So I would say Leo is definitely more set. And I think with our supporting characters, we have Teyana Taylor as Perfidia. We have Chase Infinity as Willa. And then we have potentially Benicio del Toro as Sensei and Sean Penn as Lockjaw. I could see them all happening.
Mm-hmm. I love the Benicio call out because I don't think a lot of people are talking about this. And I think he's great in the movie. I love his performance.
He's incredible. I love
it.
He's
so fun. He's such a great character. And I would love for him to get a nomination. I think it would also be great if he and Sean Penn were both nominated just because of how different these performances and characters mm-hmm. are. I think Sean Penn is so likely. I think we really will see that happen just because he has two Oscars already. Clearly, you know, what he's doing has worked with the Academy. But this is that type of dark, villainous role that we see here sometimes. But also, it's so physical. Like you were talking about his posture and just like the way he moves his mouth. And it's such a specific person that he creates that I mm-hmm. think people are really going to be talking about this season. He's such a memorable character. The way he holds his arms and the way he pronounces certain words. It's so.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh. It's so gross, but so funny at the same time.
There's almost like a childishness behind it, which is so weird. It's a very specific, it's not even really an accent. It's just a pronunciation of certain things that seems to devolve throughout the movie. Just something to pick up on. And I think with our remaining above the line categories, adapted screenplay, he's adapting Thomas Pynchon's Vineland here, mm-hmm. director and picture. I think these three are near locks.
Yeah. I think going back to supporting actors quickly, I do want to see Teyana Taylor and Chase Infinity both happen. I love this double-double possibility of supporting mm-hmm. actor and supporting actress. I would love that. But yeah, I mean, I'm nervous anytime talking about PTA in an award season just because he's been nominated so many times and he hasn't won. But I feel better about this movie and this season just because everybody likes it. Like people love this movie and just feel its power and just how commanding his vision is. And you just think about how many directors are out there supporting this film already. You have Steven Spielberg, who saw it 3 times before anyone else had seen it once, talking about how great it is. You have Scorsese doing Q&As with him. You had, I mean, one of the early screenings that was on the Warner Brothers lot, not the one I attended, but the one the day before, Inarritu, Nolan, they were all there watching the movie and congratulating him. So it's like you're seeing that in the director category, I think, start to kind of coalesce around him, which is exciting. But yeah, this feels like the movie, and if not the movie, certainly one of the top two right now.
Yeah, and I think just generally important movies of the year, this decade, I think it's just saying so much about our generation and where things have come politically, obviously, but he's able to do that through so many different storylines, through the family, through his portrayal of the government and agents and certain events over the past 5 years, through COVID, through protests and conversations on race and identity, and then how he identified with the characters. I think he's doing so much. So I hope everyone goes to see this and talks about it with friends and family. And yeah, that it does sustain itself. And, you know, from that industry support, I hope we continue to talk about it. I know we will in many ways, but I'm glad I enjoyed this so much. I knew you would enjoy it, maybe either way, but I'm glad that we align on this and have plenty more to discuss apart from what we did today.
Yeah, I was thrilled when you told me you liked it. I was so happy. I was so relieved. It's like, oh, this is going to be easy. I love when we agree. I mean, it's fun when we don't too. I think that's what makes it fun sometimes, but it's good that we agreed on this one, I will say. So final question, if you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
I mean, I think for now it has to be PTA for director. It's an accomplishment that he has deserved before, but in everything I just mentioned of how he weaves together storylines and gets across his ideas, I think having a very clear POV with a studio film in 2025 is just not something we normally see. And it's visible from the very beginning and the very end. So I applaud him on that and really sticking to his guns. And I think for having worked on it for so long and giving us something that is so timely and one that I think we'll be talking about beyond this year is, I don't think we realize maybe yet how special that is, but I think for us having talked about so many movies, we rarely say that. So PTA definitely deserving of his flowers, finally, for a movie that I think a lot of people will like or identify with in some way.
I completely agree. I was tempted to go picture because I think it would be a great best picture winner, but I'm going best director for PTA. I really can't pick anything else. I think this is just, you know, it's funny because I love Phantom Thread so much. It's my favorite movie of all time, but I think One Battle might be his best movie. Like, it might be his true masterpiece. I mean, he has many masterpieces, but I think it's his greatest achievement in his career. Like, it just feels like the culmination of so much. And it's like you were saying, right? It's speaking to the time that we're living in right now, but also to history and perpetuity. And I think that's part of what makes it great, but also just he is such a commanding hand over every single thing that's happening in this movie. It is just, it feels like him through and through. And it also feels very personal to him at the same time. So yeah, I have to give him best director, and I hope he wins it in 6 months or so, please. But yeah, we'll be talking about this a lot more.
Well, that was our conversation on One Battle After Another. Go see this movie. Let us know what you think. Let us know about all the formats and if you're also able to see them in as many formats as we are. We're very thankful for that. And we're thankful for you as listeners. Thank you for tuning in, and feel free to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, and TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. We have bonus content on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde. And we have updated nomination predictions on our website at oscarwilde.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.